thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Java with Josh. I'm your host, legislator Josh Lafazan. Today we have a really exciting show with the social media correspondent for the New York Mets, Alyssa Rose, joining us. As we say every week, having big dreams is common, but figuring out how to achieve those dreams is rare. On this show, we interview some truly incredible people to share their journeys to success and give you the tools to reach your dreams. So grab your cup of Java and let's go. Alyssa, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
Really exciting show for our listeners who are meeting you for the first time. Alyssa Rose serves as social media correspondent for the New York Mets, bringing her exceptional baseball acumen and humor to her tens of thousands of followers. She also hosts The Rose Report on Sports Grid TV. I was just talking with Alyssa because we're both from Syosset. So though I'm really meeting you for the first time on this show, you are a Syosset legend, hands down, in terms of somebody who can really make it in the sports industry, as somebody who just had a passion for the game and now gets to do this for a living. So I'm really grateful to meet you and for the fact that you serve as a role model for so many in our hometown. So first of all, thank you so much
That's
for being
so
here.
Absolutely.
It's all true. And second, tell us, you know, a little more about what you do.
Sure. So with the Mets, my title is like social media correspondent, because it makes it sound like I'm really doing field reporting. That's not what it is at all. Traditionally, what Mets social media has been is very lighthearted, a lot of fluff. So I've done some player interviews, but mostly it's a lot of celebrities when they come to the ballpark. It's fan interaction stuff. Really just all of the on-camera stuff that's done on social. A lot of stuff with alumni and former players. So that's the Mets. And then with Sports Grid, the Rose Report is my like bi-weekly show, although that's kind of halted right now while we deal with the World Series. But basically, I am their social media person. I'm the face of social. So anytime something happens, so let's say when the Big Ten came back, I made a video about that. I do weekly post-game shows after Mets games. Obviously, those are now finished. Right. But anything that's worth talking about, as long as it's appropriate, like I didn't want to get into the Odell Beckham thing a few weeks ago. Anything that I think my grandpa would be okay with me talking about, but in an edgy, funny way, that's kind of the stuff that I do there. Sports Grid is also a gambling-focused company, so I give a lot of betting tips and picks. For NFL and MLB.
So I think the grandpa barometer is hysterical, and it's definitely something I'm going to adopt in my line of work. So thank you for that tool.
Totally.
But I want to ask, you know, how did you get started in the sports industry? Because what I find is every young person in America, it seems, wants to go into sports. It's such a cool industry, yet so few do. How did you get started in the sports industry?
It's crazy. I went to college thinking I was going to study to be a sideline reporter. I wanted to be an NFL sideline reporter. Pam Oliver was my idol. And my college advisor, my freshman year, said, if that's what you want to do, you have the look, you have the talent. You know, my father's in the industry. He said, you have connections. There are four people who have the job that you want, and none of them are retiring anytime soon. So you kind of need a backup. And that same week, I had auditioned for my first play at Quinnipiac. And the head of the theater department called me into his office after my audition and said, why aren't you a theater major? If you want to be an actress, I will make that happen for you. So little impressionable 18-year-old Alyssa, I didn't even talk to my parents. I just switched my major to theater. And honestly, I thought it would be a lot easier also and a lot less work. So I was definitely all about that. And I was an actress. I was a soap opera actress out of college. And that's what I thought my career was going to be forever. And it didn't end up, first of all, the show that I was on got canceled 6 months into my casting after 43 years on the air. So I kind of knew once I started acting that that was actually not a lifestyle that was going to do well for me. And so I said to my parents, I don't think this is actually what I want to do. And now what do I do? I'm 21, 22 years old. I have absolutely no life skills. And I don't have a degree in anything that I can walk into an office with and say, give me a job. And so my dad said, you love sports, figure it out. So I started going back to the grandpa thing. This did not fall into that category. I started writing a blog just for fun. It was called Two Balls, No Strikes. And it essentially taught girls who know nothing about sports how to fake it to get a guy. And really quickly after, a sports social networking tech startup that has been defunct for years now. Found it, thought I was really funny, and asked me to write for them. And that is the day my career started, February of 2012.
It's remarkable. I just wrote down figure it out, because it's such sage advice that's so simplistic in terms of, you know, life. You know, I tell my young interns, people think, you know, life is short. And yes, life is short because, you know, any of us can be taken from this earth at any moment. But life is really long in terms of being able to weather adversity and figure it out. So this wasn't one of my plan questions, but I'm so inspired by hearing your story. You have an ability to pivot and to weather adversity where it hits you and to make a move. Where does that come from? And is that a skill you developed? And I guess how important of that is a skill for others?
It completely came from my parents. I was really, really lucky to be raised the way that I was, because everyone told my dad, you know, you're a poor Jewish boy from Queens. This isn't going to happen for you. And my dad said, screw that. Like, I have talent and I have drive and I'm going to make it happen. And so I had a dad who lived the life that I wanted to live and was so supportive and so talented. Luckily, I got 1/1000th of his talent, hopefully. But he was always just unbelievably supportive. And my parents are very, I don't know, progressive is the word, as much as just like sensible. Like, on what planet, when you, like you said, life is long. It's, you know, it's short, but it's long. How are you supposed to know what you want to be when you grow up at 18 years old? I didn't know who I was when I was 18 years old. I'm 31 years old now, and I just figured out what I want to be when I grow up. And you know what? Social media didn't exist when I was going to college. I remember my mom told me, and it's so true, and I think about it all the time. She was in parent-teacher conferences when I was in high school. I don't remember which teacher it was, but a lot of the parents were asking about what they thought their kids were going to do professionally. And the teacher said to all of the parents, I would say 3/4 of the jobs your kids are going to do haven't been invented yet. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. Everything that my friends do now, these companies, these jobs, they were absolutely not around when we graduated college, much less when we graduated high school. So I think it really just comes from having parents who believed in me, also being very lucky to have parents who could help support me if need be. I don't take that for granted at all. And I understand that that is not a luxury that everyone is afforded. But it's really important to have a support system that not only believes in you, but that gives you confidence in yourself. Because if you don't have confidence in yourself, you're going nowhere.
Well, let me ask you, going off my own experience, when I ran for office, you know, I talk about all the people who told me, you know, you're crazy, you're not going to win, you're too young, similar to the things they told your dad and probably you were told trying to make it in this industry. And I talk about, it was ironic that the group of people who supported me most were senior citizens in my community. It wasn't other young people. It was senior citizens who said, it's time for a young person to serve. The young people around me who I thought would support me really told me that I couldn't do it. And so a piece of advice I always give to others is, oftentimes your detractors will project their own insecurities onto you.
Exactly,
it has nothing to do with you. But I do want to hear, you know, what it was like to hear from your peers who were maybe in some of the blander jobs, quote unquote. Was it a shock to them to hear that you were trying to make it in this industry? And were they pushing
Not
back?
At all. No, my personality has always, there was no way I was going to have a desk job. That was never my personality. It's never been who I was. I'm a huge personality. Like, I cannot be, that's why people always ask me, why aren't you hosting television shows? When a network comes out that will allow for a big personality, 100% I will do that. But right now, social media just allows me to be myself. And I think that's what gives me, you know, the little bit of success that I've achieved thus far, is the ability to just completely unapologetically be myself and not have to rein anything in. I will say, and it's to your point, the people, you know, who are kind of your peers are not going to be supportive. It is 100% because of their own insecurities. And it is 100% because of jealousy. And people do not support people who are achieving things when they feel they are not. It's very, very rare. And I remember when I got cast on the soap opera, this was like such a dagger to me, because at Quinnipiac, the theater program, it's a small school to begin with. It's only like double the size of Syosset High School. and the theater program is very small. I think there were like 15 of us tops. So those were the people I was with all day, every day for 4 years. And I was always very focused. I was going to do film, 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 film. I was not going to do stage. That wasn't the lifestyle for me. Frankly, you don't make any money doing it. I always kind of had my sights set on being able to have the same lifestyle that I grew up with. And a girl who was unbelievably talented, but from a stage perspective, she's no one that you would see on TV. She was very demonstrative. You know, she was a stage actor completely. And there, I feel terrible saying this, but it just played to her insecurities. Very, very, very heavy set, very, you know, very insecure about her appearance. And the day I got cast on a soap opera was like the biggest achievement of my life. It was the only thing I ever auditioned for, and I was immediately cast. And it was the most incredible thing for me. And I logged on to Facebook, which was, you know, the big thing then. And her status on Facebook, I think it's called status still, was, it's amazing what happens when you have a famous daddy. And it was the biggest slap in the face. Like, you saw me work my butt off for 4 years. You saw me putting in hours and hours and hours in the rehearsal room. Like, you saw me never going out, never really making friends, because all I was doing was, you know, learning monologues and spending time in the Black Box Theater. To see that, it immediately propelled me to never, can I say the S word?
You can say it. You can say it one time.
You can say it propelled me to never give a shit about what anyone says about me that is not the one physically signing my paycheck. If you are not my family or a close friend or signing my paycheck, your opinion of me could not matter any less. And that will take you places in life.
Well, there's a lot of similarities, you know, not just of where we grew up, but in terms of having a rough road to success and not having everyone around you, you know, especially at first, support you. And I know for me, my definition of friendship changed, and it's something my father talks about, where my definition of friendship now is, are people who are friends with me going to be happy for me, whether or not it has anything to do with them? And I talk about this, you know, in politics, if I pass a bill, or, you know, if I have, you know, a good speech that I give, or if I get an award, you know, it probably has zero to do with many of my friends who are doing amazing things in their own lives. It's the friends mm-hmm. who are genuinely happy for me when it has nothing to do with them, and vice versa, who I want to be around, because not everything is a competition, and there could be more than one winner in life. And I know you believe that.
That's such a good saying. I love that. I'm going to use that.
All right. That's one from Dad too. So I know both of us
can be more than one winner in life. I love that.
Yeah. And it's true. And there should be, especially in a system where a rising tide lifts all boats. If somebody does well and somebody else does well, it is not zero sum. Whether it's in business or it's in life or relationships, you know, your true friends really do understand that there can be more than one winner. And I think that's a really important saying. And you're somebody who, you know, I definitely consider, you know, a winner of what you're doing, because not only are you doing well and achieving success, but you continue to make a difference, whether bringing people humor or joy or information. You know, you're really doing a great job. And at least I'm going to ask you, you know, what is it like to work with the New York Mets? I mean, you got to have one of the coolest jobs, you know, in sports.
I mean, listen, I grew up around that organization. I always joke and say I was born at Chase Stadium. to get to work at Citi Field. First of all, it's crazy that the first time I ever stepped foot on the warning track or on the field at all was my first day working for them. That day was one of the most emotional days of my life. It's a dream. I remember my first day, my dad walked into the clubhouse and saw me talking to, I think it was Paul Sewald. And he was like, I can't do this. This is crazy. He was like, it was such a special thing, not so much from the sense that it's always been my dream, but that I got to share that with my dad. Like, he did two sports my whole life until I think he retired from hockey 5 years ago. But I really didn't get to see him much because he traveled with both teams. Hockey and baseball overlap, especially if one or both of the teams make the playoffs. And, you know, it's a nighttime job, essentially. So he'd be sleeping when I left for school in the morning, and he would leave for work while I was at school, and he wouldn't get home until I was asleep. So I really didn't get to see much of him. And the coolest part of my job, and I'm not just saying this, and I hope the Mets don't think that I don't appreciate the ins and outs of my actual job, but the coolest part of my job was getting to have dinner with my dad in the press room before the game.
Well, it's so wonderful. And my father was really my campaign manager when I ran for school board. You know, I was in 2012, I was 18. So I know how lucky, you know, people are to have those parents who play an instrumental role, not just in your personal life, but in your professional life. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, your dad's influence on your career? You know, did you watch him growing up? You know, did he, you know, help coach and mentor you in the game? I'm sure he's somebody who has a strong opinion on the work that you do.
He does. He is my biggest critic in the best possible way, because his critiques are so helpful. He catches things that no one else catches. He has a lot more confidence in me than I have in myself. We're all our own worst critics. And I have kind of the added side of it of being a female in sports, where my appearance is just as important as my knowledge. So we kind of have, you know, an extra hump as a woman to get over in the industry. And he, first of all, he's incredibly proud of me. Second of all, he's incredibly supportive. And third, he will always tell me when there is any little thing he would change. And I mean any little thing. Like if I start a sentence with the word so, which is a big thing that I do, he catches it before I do. He notices things in my voice, like my accent, intonation, things that other people don't notice. And he got me to the point where if you text me right now, you know, we're going to throw you on ESPN to host SportsCenter, you know, off the cuff, I would be so confident that I could do it. Like I could talk about it, know exactly what I'm talking about, how to say it, with no issues, because of everything that he instilled in me. And he's the best teacher I've ever had, the best coach I've ever had, the best cheerleader I've ever had. It's a really lucky thing. And my mom is obviously a big cheerleader too. I don't want to leave her out.
We have not forgotten mom. We love mom. And it's really neat, because, you know, so much of what you do, you know, I know it is work, and I believe me, I know how hard you work, but it really probably feels more like a passion than a work at this point. And I want to hear about that. And I also want to hear, who are some of the coolest players you've met in this job? Because I know you are a fan as well as a personality.
Never once have I felt like I was working. Not once. Like I always say, I'm going to the game, not I'm going to work. It has never felt like a job, which is incredibly lucky. Because when I was acting also, I would say I'm going to the studio. I never said I was going to work. I've been very, very blessed in that regard. In terms of cool players, Todd Frazier, the number one cool guy. He is awesome. I get so much crap on Twitter because when the Mets re-signed him this season, I was so excited and so happy. Everyone's like, he stinks. I'm like, I don't care. He is awesome. He's so much on Rajay Davis. He was so awesome to me. Cespedes was really cool to me. He gets a really bad rap. I don't know where it comes from. Players love Cespedes. Cespedes was really great to me. David Wright, of course, anytime I see him, is amazing. Jose Reyes has always been amazing to me. Those are the guys I would say I've built, you know, more than anyone else, any kind of relationship with. Jeff McNeil actually always gives me like a what's up in the clubhouse. He's really nice too.
Well, can
it's
I ask?
Rare that the,
oh, yeah. Continue. No, continue.
No, it's rare that anyone's not going to be nice. There are people who are a little bit standoffish or you stay away from, but that's just, you know, it's part of any job.
Well, that was actually part of my next question, was like, do you ever get starstruck around some of these people? Because, you know, for you, what's really neat is, you know, you're saying like, what's up to these guys. You know, do you ever get starstruck around some of them?
I think because of my dad, no. Just because I've grown up being around, like the first time I was ever in the clubhouse, I was 8 years old in Turk Wendell. I walked in on him naked in the clubhouse. Like, so I have grown up around athletes to the point where I don't get starstruck by athletes at all. There are celebrities that I've met at Citi Field that I have to pick my jaw up off the ground. Like I interviewed Mariska Hargitay from Law and Order SVU last season. Mm-hmm. And I'm like a psycho SVU fan. Like I've seen every episode and it's been on for 21 years. For her, I was very much like, I don't know what to say because you're perfect. But other than that, no, I really don't get starstruck. I just, they're people.
It's a great attitude in terms of, you know, they are people. I mean, you know, my dad always said that they're people with really cool jobs, and now you're a person with a really cool job. And it brings me to my next question. You know, so many young people want to get into sports or even if it's not sports, that they want to start their own brand. You know, you said you started hustling when you were writing for that blog. You know, what is your advice to young listeners who are trying to start their own brand from scratch?
Okay. So if we're talking young, I would start to put together, learn everything you can about business. Talk to people who you want to emulate, talk to people who you find to be successful, because if you're really young, social media, I'm very into like safety with the internet. Don't be on social media. When you get older, I would say like later in high school and your parents approve of you being on social media and it's safe and you're comfortable, then really start to target everything that you post on social media towards what you're trying to achieve. And I don't mean to sound I don't even know what the right word is, but like if you look at my Instagram, it's all just pictures of me, and that's because I'm trying to push myself as a brand. If it were, you know, if you're trying to start a business, like let's say an ice cream truck, make sure that's everywhere and not in your face. I'm pushing Alyssa's ice cream truck, but there's a picture of me at the beach and I'm eating ice cream, or anything that it's all about looking at you and instantly relating it to a product or to a brand or to whatever you're trying to achieve. Social media is the absolute best marketer in the entire world. We are so lucky that we don't have to, in this generation, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to market ourselves, because there's a free tool for all of us. It's incredible. We're very lucky. But if you're really young and you're not ready for social yet, if you're young, people are going to love to talk to you and talk about themselves. Who love to talk about anything more than they love to talk about themselves? They'll tell you how they got to be where they are. They'll tell you how to get to, you know, be where you want to be. Learn as much as you can. Study as much as you can. Not that I did that. I was not the best poster to have for studying. But then parlay it into practice and into, you know, the real deal.
I think that that's all actionable advice that you just gave. And I think you can't be afraid to be annoying in terms of people say, oh, I don't want to be annoying. Like, you know, I think you'd agree that your real friends, you know, won't find you annoying. I think they'll find it inspiring that you're pushing out your content and they'll want to support you, no?
Exactly. And if they're your friends, they're going to be happy to support you. And if you have talent or you have a good idea or you have a good business, people are going to support that too, because they want to consume.
Exactly. And I think that's really actionable advice. And we have a lot of young listeners who are listening because, you know, they want to go from zero to one. So Peter Thiel's book, you know, zero to one. I have an idea. Mm-hmm. How can I make it happen? So someone looks at Alyssa Rose and they see you on TV and they see you, you know, in the clubhouse, like, you know, that didn't happen overnight. You know, you hear like in overnight success, you know, 20 years in the making, 30 years in the making. I think you really embody that. And I think it's wonderful. But if we're going to talk sports, I do have to switch gears here. And we got to talk about the state of New York sports. What is the state of the union for New York sports and what is going on?
It's not great, Josh. Not great. The Jets are going to go 0-16. They are. They're not going to win a game this season. The Giants probably shouldn't win another game this season. Just get as much draft capital as you can at this point. The Mets are really exciting because the second Steve Cohen is approved, all bets are off. He is the 36th richest man in America. He is a Mets fan. He has wanted this franchise for quite a while now, and he is not going to let it fail, just like he doesn't let anything that he touches fail. So the Mets are going to be really exciting. The Yankees, this is their year, I think. I don't know what their pitching situation is going to look like next season. It's been pretty well proven now that they could have the best, you know, offense on the planet, but if they can't stay healthy, who cares? So that's that. The Rangers, let's see what happens with the first pick and how, you know, they develop that talent. And the Islanders, baby, I'm excited about that. I didn't even mention the Knicks because, like, who cares? They're just so bad. And they've been so bad for so long.
It's so funny to hear you speak about this because, you know, if you're not from New York, you don't understand, you know, what an insufferable experience it is to be a New York fan. But obviously somebody who's so passionate about you to see the Mets on the up and up, I think is really exciting. You're Steve Cohen. You get approved to buy the team. You know, what are some of your first orders of business?
I think actually his first order of business isn't even team related. From what I'm reading, it looks like he just wants to build up the area first a little bit, which is awesome. City Field needs that desperately. I don't really like walking out into a chop shop at the end of the night, especially with after extra innings games. But player, if we're talking players, I think the first move is going to be Real Muto if he didn't shoot himself in the foot a little bit by coming out and saying, I need a $200 million contract. Because I think the reason he did that is because he knows that the Mets were going to be after him, and he knows the depth of Steve Cohen's pockets. And I think he was trying to drive his price up. And that's not the way to start off a relationship on the right foot. Like, Steve Cohen's going to pay you what you're worth. So if that's the route that you're taking, I would be a little reluctant if I were you, JT.
You heard it first on Job with Josh. You heard it first, and we'll see if we hear a reaction from JT.
That's totally just my opinion. That's based off of zero knowledge.
No, we'll see if he responds here. I do want to ask. You have so much energy, and it's such a treat to get to listen to, you know, because you have a unique mix of this encyclopedic acumen of baseball with humor and knowledge and energy. That's got, you know, I don't know if you're one of these people like Steve Ballmer from the Clippers who just wakes up roaring a go, or, you know, or what it is, but, you know, what makes you feel inspired, or what makes you feel like your best self?
I say this all the time, and especially for dating purposes, it's kind of sad, but I'm just really one-dimensional. Like, baseball and sports are my only interest and my only passion. So when I get to wake up in the morning and do or talk about or just immerse myself in my passion, that's all. Like, of course I'm going to want to get up. The one thing that I care about is waiting for me when I get out of bed in the morning, besides obviously my family and puppies and chicken nuggets. But other than that,
It's wonderful to hear. I think that you are definitely lucky that you found it, and I challenge everyone to find it, because, you know, there is so much to do in the, you know, maybe not in the year 2020, but especially 2021. Like, there is so much to do in our world that there is something that's gotta. My brother Justin says it makes life better than snooze. I love talking about that.
Right.
Because when you get up at, you know, when you get up at, you know, and the alarm clock rings, and you want to hit that snooze button, what is that one thing that says, you know what, I'm ready for my day? So I think that's wonderful. And it leads me to my last question. You've amassed so much knowledge, not just in your professional life, but in your personal life. What is the biggest piece of advice that you would give to your younger self?
I think it's what I said earlier. Nothing that anybody says about you, thinks about you, feels about you, none of it matters if they are not your family, your close friend, or the person signing your paycheck.
I love that. I think we're going to get that printed out in a bumper sticker and hand that out, because the truth is, if you can harbor fidelity to what you believe in your heart and your head, and move forward regardless of detractors and those who would take pot shots at your ideas, I think you're going to move in the right direction. So what I'll say from the bottom of my heart is thank you so much for being on the show. You are hands down one of the funniest and sharpest people, not only in the game of baseball, but anywhere. And, you know, from all of us rooting for you from Syosset and from Long Island, and everywhere, we wish you nothing but success in the future. Alyssa Rose, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll see you soon. And if Steve Cohen, ends up buying the team, we'll make sure to send your advice over his. As long as the approvals get signed, we'll make sure to send over your advice his way. But Alyssa Rose, thank you so much for being here. We'll see you soon.
My pleasure. Bye bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in, and thank you to Alyssa Rose for an amazing conversation. Make sure to click subscribe to our podcast and check us out on Instagram and Facebook for videos and bonus features. I'd also love to hear your questions and comments. Feel free to shoot me an email at josh@joshlafazan.com. I'm legislator Josh Lafazan, and thanks for joining us for Java with Josh.